Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses. And one of the toughest things for me was I had this company that did really well, and then I had to start from scratch. And when you go from a company, in fact, forget start from scratch, even before I did, I had a company that did over $3 million a month in revenue. And then we went to $500,000 during a difficult time. And I thought, I am such a freaking failure here. What am I doing? And it's hard to care and to get excited about $500,000 when you hit $3 million. It's hard. And then again, it's harder to start from scratch. And it's hard because I think it's an ego thing. You feel like, oh, this is so tiny. I remember when my dad used to be in the wholesale garment business. He used to manufacture clothing. He used to sell for tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And then he decided, I'm going to open up a store selling $9.99 pants. Just seemed like a come down. It's really hard. You don't think it plays on your ego, but it does. So why am I bringing all this up? Joining me today is an entrepreneur who built a successful company. He's like an entrepreneur since birth, built a successful company, was a big shot, started investing in other companies. And then look at the smile on his face because he knows what I'm about to say. This whammo hit. The internet as a whole, technology as a whole took a hit. As a result, he lost a lot of money. He wasn't sleeping on the streets or anything, but his wife had to take a job that paid hourly. He had to take a come down, and still, he had the energy, he had the confidence, and he had the humility to go back and say, I'm going to start basically from scratch. And he built up this company that was a hosting company. So businesses that needed their websites put up used his hosting company. He sold it to merged it with an even bigger company, Endurance, which is maybe the largest hosting company in the world, Thomas. Is it?
The second.
The second? Who's the largest?
GoDaddy.
I don't know them. Okay. I know Endurance really well because one of their brands is a sponsor of ours, HostGator. He still sits on the board of Endurance after selling the company. And then he went out and said, you know what? There's a big problem here. Phones for businesses is not really done well. I'm going to go and create this new way of doing things, this weirdo technology that most people don't really fully get excited about because they don't understand it. It's called voice over IP. I think that's the future. And of course, he was right. And he built up this business that is now phenomenally big. So here he is again and again and again building up companies. I want to learn from him what it takes to do that. I kind of introduced him. His name is Tomas Gorney. He is the co-founder of Nextiva. They are the largest privately held business communication company in the U.S. I feel like when you say business communications company, an audience of startups goes, oh boy, this sounds like too much like the New York phone company or whatever. It sounds too big. It's like a way of communicating. We'll talk about what that means in a moment. We can do it all thanks to two phenomenal sponsors. The first, Tomas knows really well. It's called HostGator for hosting your website. Of course, he knows it well because he is on the board of the parent company. And the second will help you host, will help you hire phenomenal developers. It's called TopTal. Tomas, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Revenue now at this latest business of yours, Nextiva, is how much?
We are trending around 170 million.
So I mentioned earlier that business communications, 170 million. I feel like it for an audience of startups, it just sounds too big business. Give me like a simple use case that would help us wrap our heads around what Nextiva does. What's one example?
So first of all, I would say we are just at the starting point. I don't think so we're big at all. I keep reemphasizing it internally all the time. We are just a startup. So what we do is significantly more than just providing a phone service. And the idea for Nextiva originated because of all the trouble that we have encountered while we're building our prior businesses, not only with phone systems, but also with CRM solutions, with collaboration tools, and how they weren't interacting together. And We're looking for a solution there in the marketplace that we could use for our businesses, and there was not a solution available, and there was nobody really addressing this gap in the market, and we were determined to fix it. And this is exactly how the idea for Nextiva started. And as you mentioned, when we started Nextiva, it was just a few of us in one room with no outside funding, no glamorous high-profile investors. And we didn't have a clue what we were doing, but we saw that big need there for businesses really to simplify the communication. But for us, and you mentioned this as well, Communication is significantly broader term than establishing a connection between one person and another. For us, communication is a really taking all the channels of how people communicate with businesses today, from email, chat, SMS, social media, you call it, and bring them all together into one platform. So we can then make sense out of the information with AI, with predictive analysis, and then also help businesses really then to automate their business flows and interact better with their customers. And that's what business communication means for us.
When so if I understand you right, you've got tons of clients. If I were to use Nextiva, a phone call that would come in would come to me on a Nextiva app or an actual phone device that, that you guys would rent or sell to me, correct?
This would be your choice, yes.
Right? And then if somebody wanted to message me by chatting on my website and asking a question like, hey, what's the price exactly on this? What's the commitment level? They would chat to me, again, using Nextiva. It's part of your suite of products. Their contact information would go into a phone book, a CRM, that is also part of the Nextiva product. And all of this, the fact that they interact with each other, and if for some reason I need to send out a fax, or if I need to, I don't know, store some data about them or send them a survey, all of this is wrapped into one. That is what Nextiva is. I'm going to talk about that in a little bit.
And beyond that, and the most important part of it, what we develop and a lot of patents around, is that you can measure the entire customer journey and you can determine how you interact with your customers based on their happiness level, based on their sentiment, based on their feedback. And this is what makes the entire interaction model beautiful.
Okay. I want to get into the details of that in a moment. Let me ask you about your accent. Where's that from? Where were you born?
I was originally born in Poland. Okay. Where I spent the very first 14 years of my life. And then I moved to Germany for 6 years. And then since 20, I am here in the United States.
At 14, you got to Germany. Did you speak German?
No, I didn't. I learned to speak German when I was in Germany.
And still, you looked around, you saw that the school didn't have a newspaper. And what did you do?
I started one.
How? Why?
I became a chief editor of the newspaper and just got some talented people from school to, you know, get together and really launch it and then deliver that paper to the, not only to the school, but to the surrounding community.
Let me understand something. I get that you didn't speak the language, so you brought in students who did to write in German. What I wonder is, how were you, what does it say about you? What can I see about you today in the 14-year-old child who convinced others to go and write the paper? How did you communicate to them? What was it? What does it say about you? What part of you is expressing that?
I think that I have a sense of purpose and vision, and I have a way of getting people excited and getting behind it.
Yes.
And that's probably one of the things that I would give credit to myself, if nothing else, because everything else, and even that is a teamwork, but I think I am good in seeing something that doesn't exist and then painting a picture that makes it realistic and achievable.
Why? And, what was it that excited other 14-year-olds about creating a newspaper?
You know, I don't remember anymore what it exactly was, but I remember that this was, again, sense of purpose more than anything. I mean, we weren't making money off that. It was just something that, you know, give us pride and creating a newspaper for the school and communicate information and then getting the local stores contribute to the newspaper to be able to print it. So it was somewhat of
meaning
a business.
By ads, essentially, so that you can fund the newspaper. And you did all of this despite not knowing the language. Okay, let's jump over a couple more years. At 16 is when you started your first for-profit business. What was that business?
Absolutely. It was a PC distribution company. Back then in the days, this was, you know, early 90s, and the industry was booming, as you probably recall. Dell Computers here in the United States was becoming really big.
Getting 2000 was a thing.
Yeah, and so that, you know, and that it's exactly that's can that around the exact the time,
yes.
And we were, you know, and there was this gap in the market in Germany. There were some really good established companies, but they were extremely expensive and made computers really not very accessible to the lower income markets or students. And so I thought that, I can do this. I started making a lot of phone calls and figuring out how I can buy cheap peripheries for the computer, build those computers on my own with help of a couple of guys that I pay commission, for the build, and yes. then started selling them. And then from that, we grew relatively quickly because I was advertising. I was using any methods that I could use to get advertisement, including advertising in schools and in papers, on radio. And I was doing this all for free. I kind of figure out all tricks of the trades.
You mean all the advertising was for free, correct, but exactly. When you were building these computers and selling them, this correct. Was a profit. Yeah. Talk to me about how did it feel when you sold, when you brought in a profit? Was there one memory that you had that was exciting?
The exciting part was always that when we brought some profit that we can grow quicker. I wasn't as much, and until today, I am not a materialistically oriented guy. At the same time, I say to our guys, we are not running a Red Cross here. We are a for-profit organization. But, my appetite grows as the opportunity becomes bigger. And okay. The opportunity was becoming bigger. So I was looking at this more as an opportunity for reinvesting the funds. And as soon the profit came in, I was looking for ways where I can import now from other countries, like yeah. China, Taiwan, and so on. So I can buy cheaper hardware, sell it at a better price, expand the market. And, it is a kind of a snowball effect.
Yeah, yeah. How big did it get?
It got pretty big. This was the time also where I was contemplating on moving to United States. And despite the success, since I was 7 years old, since I was living in communist Poland, where we didn't have a TV, we didn't have a car, and literally radio was our primary source of entertainment, I was determined to live in America. And my parents they remind me on it, but they don't even know how that come to be. I just said, that I'm going to go to America, and so that determination continued. And when I was 16, I was also privileged to visit United States for the very first time, and I came directly to Los Angeles. And so when I came for that month to Los Angeles, that convinced me that this is the country I want to spend my time in and move to. And
because so, what did you feel? What did you see here?
The opportunities. I mean, despite being in Germany and being free country, was still social democracy. I grew up in communism. And then in a social democratic country where even although I was running a business, it was still not easy to do that. They yeah. were still, and also Germany back then was a very conservative country. So a young guy with an accent, without formal schooling, wasn't necessarily the profile for a buyer. And so that was making it difficult for me, to run the business. But, I was overcoming that relatively easy. I had the saying back then, I may speak with an accent, but I don't think with an accent.
And so, you had to say this because you're saying in Germany, your Polish accent was a barrier to selling because you seemed like a person.
It was perceived barrier of intelligence.
Wow. I didn't realize that. Okay.
And I don't think so that exists anymore. I frequently go back to Germany and I think that stigma disappeared over the last several years. But when you look back 20 years ago, this was definitely the case.
Okay. All right. So you get to the US, you have to give up your business, the one that you started in Germany, because correct. You're starting fresh? You do. And then is that when you started working for $3 a day or living on $3?
Yes. So kind of there's a little bit more to the story. So I came to the United States when I was 16. That was the time then I decided I want to move here. I went back And I keep in touch with somebody I knew in Los Angeles. And that person called me around 1996, early 1996, and said he's about to start the business. And he offered me a position if I would join him for sweat equity. And, you know, without thinking twice about it, I said, sure, yes, let me go. So I sold my businesses. I had another business, small business, in a rush for a fraction of the price probably I would be able to receive normally. And in a month later, I was here in Los Angeles, in United States, starting a business with that person. And since it was a deal of sweat equity, I was essentially not making money and the business was struggling in the beginning. And unbeknownst to me, when I moved to United States, I didn't know that you have to have a credit history to be able to deal with banks, with apartment buildings, and so on. So I had to buy everything for cash. I had to buy my car for cash, which broke down a couple of months later, so I didn't have a car. Then, you know, I had to prepare for my apartment like 8 months ahead of time. I even to get my very first debit card, I needed to put more deposit down than the credit I received on the card. So as you can imagine, you start running out of money relatively quickly. And so during the day I was helping to build a business, at night I was doing various jobs from valet parking cars, carpet cleaning at apartment buildings and restaurants, being a waiter at different events. And so I was accumulating enough money to be able to live off $3 a day. But, you know, I never felt pity for myself.
Why did you feel like you're better than that? You're a smart guy. You're wasting your time cleaning somebody's carpet instead of working on more intelligent projects. Why did you think that?
I was doing that during the day. And at night, you know, it was about survival.
That was it. It was just like, there's no other way. If this is what I have to do, that's what I'm going
to
do.
And it wasn't even that if I have to do. I wasn't thinking about it much. I didn't give myself a choice that, you know, this was part of my life. I was more excited being in the United States than having the burden to do that. I didn't see it as a negative thing. I remember those days, how excited I was when I was able to go on the weekend, maybe to Sisla, to get in, you know, all you can eat meal for $7. Exactly. You know, that was, wow. I mean, it was like a thrill to do it. And we usually went with a friend of mine so we could share because it was like $7. So we share a meal and a plate, you know, and one of us always was running back and forth to the buffet. But having said that, you know, I never saw this at difficult times. I truly didn't. When I replay the clock and I look back at this, you know, it's maybe a sense of ignorance and being delusional. But whatever you call it, you know, I was kind of more like Forrest Gump, you know, you got to go.
So what was the work that you were doing during the day? And then how did this sweat equity turn out for you?
It was pretty good. It was actually the very first web hosting business I got involved in. When we started the business, it was actually website design business. But those was already the times where web hosting came around. And we started building website plus hosting the websites. And a couple of years later, the primary business owner, the majority business owner, decided to sell the business. Although on one side, I was excited that we are going to sell the business. On another side, I thought we are selling way too early because it's still a niche market. It was very difficult to have a website for the mainstream user because it was super technical. And I thought we had the opportunity really to redefine this market, and by selling it, that we would lose the opportunity. And we did sell, and overnight, you know, thanks to the person and the effort that I put to the business, I was able to have some incredible financial gains. And
how incredible! I've read a little bit about it.
Couple of multi-million dollars, you know, it started with a couple of million dollars. And then because I roll over some of that investment into this company, that company ended up going public. And, you know, that became substantial gain originally until it became a big loss later on. beginning of 2000. And so having said that, I was more focused at that point in time, what can I do next? What business can I build? What opportunity?
Before we go into how you recovered, because I think that was an extraordinary recovery, I want to know what happened to the money. But also, before we even get into that, the reason that this business took off is because hosting had a natural built-in recurring revenue model in it, right? A business was paying you to host their website, and then they were paying you on an ongoing basis. So I get that. I wonder, how did you get customers back then? How, what was it that allowed you to get customers for this host, web hosting business?
Back then, it was pretty much mostly banner advertising. And
you were buying banners. People would click the banners. Really?
That's how it worked back then. Yeah, exactly. And our primary source was Linked Exchange. I don't know if you remember Linked Exchange from the back.
Tony Shea's company.
Exactly. Yeah, and yeah. We were his first customer, paying customer.
The way that Linked Exchange worked was, anyone could put a banner on their website. In exchange, they would get banners on other people's websites, but Tony would take a few of those banners and sell them to companies like you. You were the first customer. That was the model. And because you got into it when people thought banners were a little weirdo thing, they thought they were polluting the internet. Little did we know that was actually good advertising, right?
Back then it was.
It worked. And then, so just to be clear, you were, from what I saw, a bunch of different places. At 22, you were a multimillionaire, right?
That's correct.
And then something happened that led you to lose the money. Let me take a moment to talk about my first sponsor, and then we'll get into that. The first sponsor is a company called TopTal. Tomas, do you know TopTal?
I know about him, yes.
You do? Do you know anything good or bad? It's okay to say bad.
Not much.
Okay, I'll tell you how it works. Usually when it comes to hiring developers, what you have to do is place a bunch of ads. And now there's some companies that will help you get those ads everywhere. Post your ad on LinkedIn, post your ad on this and that, I don't even know where. And then you get a bunch of resumes, and usually they're companies that will help you sort through those resumes and organize them. It's still a process. TopTal said, you know what? Let's not improve this process. Let's just get away from it completely. What if we create a test that's so hard that only the best of the best developers will crave to pass it to prove themselves? And then when someone like Tomas comes over and says, I need to hire a developer because I need artificial intelligence, I need machine learning, I need, I don't know what, even WordPress development, you go to them, they have you talk to a matcher. The matcher will understand a little bit about how you work. What software do you use? What are your hours? What are the quirks of the company? Got it. Okay, great. Give us a few days. We'll go look through our network. They go to their network, and then they give you not thousands of people, not hundreds of people to impress you, but maybe two people. Say, Tomas, based on what you've told us, these two people will fit in. You talk to them via video chat the way you are with me right now. If you like them, you get to hire the person that you want and get started within sometimes a day or two. I've had people hire part-time, full-time, whole teams of people who really work well together through TopTal. All right, I'm going to say one last thing to you, Tomas. This, I don't know, are you someone who's still like a coupon clipper? Do you care about deals and discounts?
All the time.
You do? Like what? What's a good discount that you go for?
Generally, what I look for is, like, let's say closing. I don't buy them off rack. I buy summer clothes in the winter and winter clothes in the summer.
Really?
So that would be a good example of the way how I think I'm just not trying to be wasteful. You know, I wouldn't say that. If I really want something, I get it. But other than that, I am conscious of the price all the time. You know, the best source of price sourcing is Amazon today, right? So that's pretty much my primary source where I go and make sure that I'm getting a good deal.
I like if I buy an Apple device, I go to their refurbished store. You get a discount and you get all the backing of Apple. I like it. I like that you're doing summer clothes in the winter, winter clothes in the summer. All right, so then you will like this. I'm going to close out the ad for TopTal by telling you that if you use the special URL I'm going to give you, you're going to get 80 hours of TopTal developer credit for free, 80 hours for free when you pay for your first 80 hours, in addition to a no-risk trial period, meaning you're not happy. They're not going to say, Tomas, pay us. They're going to say, we'll pay the developer. Go your own way. We don't want you to pay for something you're not happy with. Here's the URL. It's toptal.com/mixergy. Top is in top of your head. Tal is in talent. toptal.com/mixergy.
You can bet we will use it.
I bet. Oh, that's awesome. That's great to hear. All okay. Right. What happened? But by the way, I don't want to gloss over that. I know that they love it when my guests sign up. I believe their secret mission is just to have me tell the guest. They don't care if the audience signs up. They just love that the guests are signing up. What happened to the money? You made some investments.
Correct. I invested into a couple of companies. I co-founded an advertising B2B advertising business, Content Network, and that was sponsored by, that was generating revenue through advertising. And that Content Network also got financing from SoftBank. But I co-invested into that business as well. And then in addition to it, I invested in a few other businesses along with other people. And unfortunately, you know, a couple of years later, and this was around 1998, and a couple of years later, you know, around 2000, early 2000, 2001, kind of the world was falling apart. And as the world was falling apart, we were losing customers. You know, some of the other businesses that I get involved in and the people I got involved in weren't, you know, as ethical that I would expect to be. So the combination of all of that really left me by pretty much October of 2001 with no businesses, not knowing really how I will pay my next mortgage. And the only thing that I had in my hand was a credit card. That, and I, one thing I always made sure that I preserve a good credit, given my original experience not having any credit in United States. I knew how important it is to have a good credit, and so and this is how I started then the next business in October of 2001 with a credit card in my hand, and thanks to American Express, you know, I was able to finance it, and so that's really kind of how this all came together. So I literally went from, you know, not having anything to becoming a multimillionaire within a couple of years of my arrival in the United States, to losing literally everything and not knowing how I will pay my next mortgage in October of 2001.
And that company was iPower, right?
This is correct.
And it was a hosting company, very similar to what you'd done before?
Yes. And I got fortunate because, to my surprise, when we exited in 1998, the hosting business, I expected that the web hosting industry will advance, that it will make the advanced technologies and the technical applications much easier to use for people a couple of years later. And so on one side, as happy as I was that we had a successful outcome, at the same time, I thought we missed an opportunity. But when, you know, I wasn't sitting there in October of 2001 and I took a look at the web hosting industry, I came to find out that all the good web hosting companies were acquired by mediocre or shitty web hosting companies that either struggling or went out of business or went public and now going out of business, or they essentially, you know, faded out because they didn't do a good job. And also, I didn't see any advancement in the industry. The industry seemed in the exact same place when I left it 3 years ago. And with that in mind, this provided me the big opportunity to re-enter the industry and to do things right this time. And one thing I do want to mention that when I get involved in businesses, I, like I mentioned before, I get involved in businesses, not because only of the potential of that to be a successful business outcome, but more so I get involved because I see a gap in the market and I see a market in that gap. And I want to solve a meaningful problem in the market because I always focus on providing value and I see money just as a side effect of providing value. And one of the things that was a pivotal moment in my life that carries me through all the ventures, from iPower to Sidelock to Nextiva, is that around the age when I was 16, and as I told you, I was selling the computers, I lived through the transition of DOS to Windows, where you had to type long string command lines on the DOS operating system. And then now overnight, companies like Microsoft, Apple, made computers available to everyone. And that idea intrigued me. And that idea really was the pivotal moment in my life because I said to myself, I'm not sure what I'm going to do in my life, but I want to make advanced technology simple for other people. And this is why I was so regretful when we exited the very first time, because I thought we had that opportunity. Now, you know, in October of 2001, seeing that the industry is still struggling and there's no leader in the marketplace, I said to myself, we're going to do this right this time. So luckily, thanks to American Express and the credit card and good credit, you know, I took the credit card, sold what was once worth millions of dollars in stock for $6,000, bought a couple of servers, used that credit card for marketing and advertising, hired one employee plus myself who started developing the software, and we started acquiring customers one by one. And the very first couple of months, we were acquiring a couple of customers a month until we developed that easy-to-use software where anybody without technical knowledge was able to build, manage, and promote the website. And so we went literally from acquiring three customers a month, which accumulated roughly to 100 customers. Three customers a day that ultimately accumulated to 100 customers a month. To overnight, when we launched the product, to acquiring the very first month, 3,000 customers, second month, 5,000 customers, and with a couple of months later, we were acquiring 10,000 customers every single month. We opened an entire new market opportunity. We eliminated a lot of the middlemen that were charging arm and the leg for the business owners to develop websites and host them. And we created this big opportunity in the marketplace. We were the fastest growing web hosting company for many years to come.
So I'm looking at an early version of the website. You didn't start off as ipower.com, right? What was the early domain name?
It was ipowerweb.com.
ipowerweb.com, okay. And if I understand you, web.com. If I understand you right, you're saying that the thing that made it take off was that you made it easy for people to just go and set up their own website by themselves, right?
That's correct.
I'm looking at the early version of the site. I don't see that. What I see is, I don't see that as the big boast. The big boast is the price, that you guys were offering a really low price compared to other people. Am I right?
We weren't the cheapest guy in the market. It was a low price, but you know, it was the full package. It was the combination between making it very simple. This was the time when you look at the old website, we had one price, one package. Right. And when you look at everybody else, they make it very complicated. They slice and dice the pricing structure that it was very tough to understand for anybody. So between the value proposition of making it easy to use and the ability to really to tell every prospective customer, don't worry, when you come to us, you get everything, and everything is inclusive, right? Made that combination of both of those elements made it work. We were the very first company to do that. Before, nobody really was trying to look at the world that way.
I see that. Yeah, for a long time, it just was $7.95 per month, free setup, free domain, everything just completely included in the package, including like a content package, which I don't know what that was, but I saw that everything was included in there. That was a big part of it. I saw that you were using affiliate program, like paying people to send you customers. That Absolutely. Was working well. What else was working well for you for getting customers?
Back then, it was any form of advertising, many of them that don't exist in those same formats again. But since we came from a company that was a B2B network, we understood very well the other side of the business. And we knew how to target customers, and especially small businesses. So we were advertising on Yahoo, we were advertising through email, we were advertising to affiliate networks. And then eventually, word of mouth became a big part of our advertising method, because as we were accumulating customers and doing a really good job between product and service, we were just accumulating more and more customers without even further advertisement.
Okay. And then what happened to that business? This was a huge success. Correct.
And we were growing this business very fast, but the market was becoming more and more fragmented. There were hundreds of web hosting companies, and we were one of the leading ones. At the same time, from everything I know about markets, I know that fragmented markets will consolidate over time. And we wanted to be one of the consolidators. We didn't want to exit the market. At that point in time, we had offers and many people that came to us to try to buy the business, and we refused to sell the business. We wanted to be on the other side. However, at the same time, our business wasn't constructed to acquire companies. Our business was an organic acquisition engine. And so we ran into this company, Endurance, which actually at that point in time was a smaller competitor. We were twice as large as Endurance. And they didn't know how to acquire organically customers. But what they did have, they had this overbuilt platform that could cause millions of customers. And they started acquiring smaller web hosting companies. And, you know, I really connected with the founder of that company. And together we said, let's put our companies together because we can create a lot of great damage in the marketplace. And this is exactly what we did in 2007. And then they had some investors in the business. We replaced those investors with a private equity / venture capital fund from Silicon Valley at that time, because we needed capital to acquire other businesses. And then we started accelerating the business. And so we went literally from a combined business that was $60 million business in 2007 to a $300+ million business by 2011, as I recall correctly.
Just through acquisitions, constantly going out there.
Organic and acquisitions, yes.
And was a company called Bizland before you...
The original company before it called Endurance was Bizland, because they were going after free web hosting. Kind of reinvented themselves. And that's why they built that robust platform, because they were hoping that they will be acquiring millions of customers, which didn't unfold it the way they expected, but in many ways unfolded much better, because then they went on the acquisition spree. We met, both companies met, and together we were able to create much better business.
Okay. That time you ended up selling the company, I think, to a private equity group, right? Was this when, doesn't matter about the details of it. You did sell to a private equity group, right? You now still sit on the board. They went public again, or what was the...
We sold most of the company in 2011, end of 2011. Uh-huh. We went public end of 2013, and I started separating myself from the company because I am an innovator. I want to change markets. And at that point, this company became more of an acquisition engine versus a company that was innovating on the front, on the front from the customer's perspective. And so although, you know, I thought we were doing all the right things. Like I said, I sit on the board until today, and the company became a really good engine as a consolidator. This wasn't something that, number one, was as interesting to me as an entrepreneur, and number two, it was not something that, you know, where my skill set really is. And this company had much better people, including the founder of Endurance and other management members, that they were equipped to do that business. They knew how to do that. And so I felt very comfortable continuing on the board, still leaving money in the business and going and starting a new business where I thought we can make a huge difference in the marketplace.
That brings us to Nextiva. Let me talk about my second sponsor and then get into the problem you discovered at iPower that led you to found Nextiva. Second sponsor is a company called HostGator. You know a lot about HostGator.
I do.
What about HostGator?
I love it. You got to sign up.
So HostGator was one of the companies that was acquired by Endurance, as I understand it, right? Really good. One of the winners in the space. And I'll tell you how I use HostGator. I think that what they want me to do is tell people, look, if you don't like your hosting company, you can switch to HostGator. Totally true. Or if you're starting a new business, you can go to HostGator. Again, totally true. I think there's something else, Tomas, that we need to be aware of. When we take an idea and we give it a website, it makes the idea feel more real, more significant, gives it more gravitas in people when we talk about it to people. For example, my best example actually is Seth Godin is a marketer. He has his personal site, sethgodin.com. He still, whenever he has this new big idea, he gives it its own website. Like you think about, what is it called? Personal MBA or something. He decided, I'm going to teach people the stuff that you don't learn when you get an MBA. He gives it instead of a slash on his own website, instead of a subdomain on his website, like mba.sethgodin.com, he gives it its own website. And as a result, it becomes a thing that people can talk about. It feels more substantial. It feels a little bit more separated and allows it to grow more. For me, I'll give you a smaller example. My goal is to run 7 marathons on 7 continents in 1 year. Now, I immediately had a foot issue as I ran too fast to get to marathon distance. I went to my podiatrist and I said, I've got this goal. Here's even this website that I built to tell the world about it. Will you help me because my foot hurts right now and I need to keep training? They did see the website. They did see that this is a big thing. They saw my mission and they wanted to support me. And yes, they saw me instantly. Actually, like within an hour, they saw me at their office and they helped fix my foot issue. And I was back on track and I ran my marathon. So what I'm saying is, anytime someone out there has got an idea, maybe you even have an ebook, maybe you've got some research that you put together, give it its own website. It'll give it more gravitas. It'll allow it to spread even better. And if you do it with HostGator, you're going to get hosting from a company that survived because they do hosting right. And number two, inexpensive. We're not looking for spending top dollar on hosting just to impress our friends because our friends don't know. They don't even look at who's hosting us. You might as well go with the company that just works and will give you a fair, good, low price. If you go to hostgator.com/mixergy, you'll even get a lower price than everyone else because that is the lowest price available. You get 45-day money back guarantee. You get unmetered. You know what? You don't need to see the details. You don't need me to give it to you. Go to hostgator.com/mixergy. If you're not happy, hit me up and my team. I stand behind them. Andrew@mixergy.com is my personal email address. I've always opened it up. If you're not loving them, I want to know about it. But people who sign up end up loving them. So go to hostgator.com/mixergy right now and sign up. All right. What's the problem you saw at iPower that led to this new business?
You mean at Nextiva or iPower? Going back,
I thought what happened was you were at iPower and you said, hey, look, I need a phone company. I need phone solution here. This is a problem. And there wasn't a clear solution. You said, you know, one day maybe I'll solve it. Am I oversimplifying the process?
Not really, with the exception that this is Nextiva. iPower was the prior business, right?
Right. No, I thought you had a problem at iPower that embedded itself in your head. And you said, I think I have a solution for this. Am I right?
There were multiple events that transpired when you, one is that we saw the problem ourselves, but we also observed the problem because we were serving millions of businesses. We observed the problem from just observing the market, talking to people. And when the more we dig deep down into the problem, we discovered that we're not the only people having that problem.
What is the problem that you noticed?
The main problem was that people were using already back then, and today this problem even became bigger. People were using 10 to 15 different applications to communicate with the customers, to collaborate with the teams, to engage with the customers. The data of those applications was living all over the place, in different places. It was fragmented. And integrating those information together into one place was really difficult. It was either very expensive and you need a third party, or like I said, it was difficult to do and people were just giving up.
So what you're saying is, I still want to understand this issue because I want to understand what this business does today and how it solves it. The problem is, if I'm communicating with someone via email and then communicating with them via phone and then communicating via chat, there is no one central place that lets me know and reminds me of all these different communications that I've had with them, or other people on my team lets them know, here's what Andrew's done with this customer before we follow up. Let's understand what happened before. Is that it?
This is correct. And there's now one place to do this, which is NexOS, which is the Nextiva platform.
And so you realize this is the problem. We're going to solve it. And then did you start to build it first before you did it? Before you got customers, or how'd you work it?
So we started with the most fundamental service that everybody requires, which back then, when you look at now 10 years ago, it was the phone service. This was the primary way how businesses communicated with the customers, phone and email. Right. So we wanted to solve this from ground up. And we address the phone service first before we ultimately end up building the platform.
And so that would give a business a phone service with an actual phone that they would connect into an Ethernet cable, you know, the internet cable in their wall.
Absolutely.
And then they could make phone calls, except instead of using the phone company to make the calls, they were using their internet connection that they already paid for.
Correct. That's at the simplistic level.
That was the first version.
But even the first version was significantly more sophisticated, because today we don't think about this anymore as much. But when 10 years ago, if you as a business owner, small or large, wanted to have a phone system that makes you look professional, that has an IVR where you can press different options for sales and support and marketing, and you know, have dialing in between and collaborate with your team members on video or chat, that didn't exist yet. You know, you had to go through to providers such as Avaya, Cisco, and they sold you $250,000 system that was on promise and you needed to implement and then pay extra support costs on top of that. And even those systems weren't that reliable, right? So our goal wasn't just to provide a dial tone. That didn't sound interesting to me, like to just go into a business and say, let me just plug, you know, the internet cable into a phone, provide the dial tone. Yes, that's a value proposition that existed as part of what we did. But the true value proposition was that we really allow businesses to take advantage of advanced technologies, simplify them, and really democratize innovation. And this is the underlying DNA of Nextiva. We are democratizing innovation as we are growing as a company in many areas. We bring innovation to everybody. And the way we did it back then, that we took all that complexity what on-premise phone system had, and we brought it to the cloud, made it simple. And our very first business slogan at Nextiva was helping businesses to look like Fortune 500 companies. And we truly did it.
You know, I'm looking at an early version of your site from July 2008. It says, get Fortune 500 phone features for a fraction of the cost, and you offer to slash people's phone bill by 80%. No long distance. Again, no hidden fees, just like you did in your previous business. And it was like the things that you just mentioned earlier, like press one for sales, press two for this, et cetera. That was the first version. How did you get your first batch of customers for that? What was your sales process?
There was inherent market already, early adopters that were looking for solutions like ours. And so we were advertising on, at that point, Google became more the primary source of advertisement. And then we were also doing ads in papers. And then there were websites that were generating leads, which we were then buying and then contacting customers and really cold calling. And sometimes we just simply went out there knocking on the doors and trying to, you know, get a business.
You mean literally knocking on doors, or
literally knocking on the doors of other businesses?
You
yes.
had salespeople just go walk door to door.
Yes, salespeople, including us. Yes.
You mean you personally would do it?
Yeah, and the co-founders of the company, absolutely. I mean, we went to Better Business Bureau shows. I mean, again, there's no job that we are not willing to do to grow a business as long as it's ethical.
I saw, again, an affiliate program that you had on the website. Anyone can earn up to $100 if they just refer somebody who opened up an account with you. And I noticed in the beginning, a lot of your customers seems to have been really small companies. Like there's one person who's on your testimonial page from the Internet Archive, again, going back to 2008, Brandon Boldrini. He's a one-man operation. He just wanted to give the impression that his business was bigger, and that's why he signed up. And that's the level that you guys were servicing back then.
Correct. And then as our feature level expanded, we grew. You know, we went through the natural disruption curve, right? We started at the non-consumption level, and then as we expanded our functionality, we started approaching larger companies, and we became a replacement or a great alternative to the bigger on-premise phone systems.
Let's talk about when you didn't listen to customer requests. So you did listen to a lot of your customers. You wanted to understand what they needed, but you told our producer, look, I also have to learn not to listen to customer requests. Was there an example of something that you shouldn't have listened to?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, there's a tough, always a tough balance. And, you know, people always say they put themselves into a customer's shoes. I will go a step farther. I am a customer at heart. And my philosophy is not only putting myself in the customer's shoes, but I am the customer of Nextiva. And being the customer of Nextiva, I dream up what I believe that me as a business, we as a team, we should have in order for us to thrive and excel. And very often, what you get from customers when you talk to them, they just want a little bit of a better service and they want more reliability and, you know, better price. But what you don't get from them is the level of imagination that it's our responsibility to deliver to the marketplace. And as the saying goes, right, when you ask customers what they want, you know, they will tell you they want a faster horse. And so, and that analogy, it's true for the most part, because, you know, it's not the customer's responsibility to be the innovator. It is our responsibility to look at the market, look at how it's evolving, look at where it's going, and how we can serve our customers much better so they can provide much better service to their customers. And so you cannot constantly listen to them upfront, but but what I always do, if we come up with ideas, I run those ideas even before we go into a development cycle or innovation cycle. I randomly run them by people every time I run into people. This could be at the airport, friends, different kind of events that I...
What's an example of a feature that you just ran into somebody at the airport and asked them about, or into a friend, and you got useful feedback on?
I mean, you know, probably the best thing is to describe the NextOS platform. When the NextOS platform,
meaning it's called NextOS.
NextOS, the platform that combines all those interactions into one place and allows you to view customers holistically. So everybody, you know, the frontline employee can see the real-time information of the customer at the individual level all the way to the CEO. I went out there and I kind of described this. If there would be a system like that, would people buy it? Will people be willing to abandon, you know, other CRMs, other multiple solutions? And would they be willing to switch from QuickBooks and spreadsheets to that system? And, you know, and then I was fine-tuning the idea as I was going along. And so as those ideas originated by me, but they got formed by a lot of the input that we as a team and myself got from talking to people.
Do you remember something that you learned that was surprising to you because you did it this way? Because
I think the biggest part that was surprising to me was that that the idea is that if you develop more and more features, or a lot of entrepreneurs have the idea that if you develop more and more features, you become more and more successful. And what I found out that actually, that was probably the most overwhelming part of a lot of the other products in the marketplace. That, you know, some of them had a lot of functionality, but that functionality made it more clunky than appealing to the user. So people were looking for solutions that really allows them to do what they need to do to get their jobs done versus just buying features and functionality. And then the other thing was surprising to me, that people really don't want to talk about features. They want to talk about how we will solve their problems. So I can give you an example. We are industry agnostic company, but what we discovered in the insurance industry, that independent insurance agents have really trouble renewing their customers because of regulatory environment and, you know, how they need to manage renewal of insurances. And our platform at nature already supports that functionality. But if we would be listing all those features and functionalities to them, it would be meaningless. But by telling them that actually by using NextOS platform, they will increase the likelihood of renewal of their customers, it just hit right at them and spoke to them, so they could envision now how the NextOS platform will give them an ROI on their business. And those were the surprising pieces. And really, at Nextiva, we're now truly transitioning. You won't see it now on this website today, but we are having in a couple of weeks a new release that we really are departing from talking from features and functionality to more benefits and the jobs that people trying to accomplish, and talking to them directly how we actually will help them to accomplish them.
I'm noticing that a little bit on some of the deeper pages on the site. Like there's one here about NextOS that says, make it easy for customers to reach you. And then you have an image that shows, here are all the different ways that they're reaching you already. We'll organize it in one place. Or capture every customer interaction. I could see it. Those aren't even the best examples. I have to keep scrolling, but
those are some of the examples. So, and they are but a little
how do you higher know that? But, sorry to interrupt. How do you know that? How do you know that the insurance clients are trying to improve retention and are having issues with regulation? What's the way that you talk to customers or that your team talks to customers to bring back that knowledge to do it?
So we go out there. And we go out there and we talk to the verticals. We talk about the issues and problems. We go to conferences.
Where how do you do it? I go to conferences too. I'm trying to find people's problems. And lately, I haven't been doing a good job with it. Do you have something formal that allows you to do that?
I mean, when we go to a conference, we already have pretty good idea of the set of problems that people are experiencing.
And so because, how do you know that?
At this point we have a really good benefit because we have roughly 100,000 customers, and you know, when those customers come to us and they start using our product, we're observing them how they use our products. We also observing what the gaps are between how they like to use our products and the features and functionality we don't have to allow them to do that. And so we identify those first. And then we connect our product teams and myself. We really are very connected. There's a connective tissue to our implementation team.
Can you be more specific?
So, like the insurance example, right?
Yeah.
We started identifying that there are multiple companies in the insurance industry starting to set up the system in a way that helps them to renew their customers. And okay. So this caught our attention and we started digging in and we found out this is a big problem in the industry.
Well, because you see how they set up the software, what they're doing with it.
Exactly.
Got it. And then you call them up and say, why are you doing this way? What are you looking for?
And even during the onboarding process, they're talking to us, right? We gather the information. They telling us what they're trying to accomplish so we can set up the product appropriately.
And do you have a place where you keep track of all that? So if somebody talks, you do. There's one repository for all these notes.
And then we do a lot of internal interviews with those teams, yes.
With those teams? What are people signing up for?
Internal teams, yes.
Got it.
So we do have a central repository of those notes. Yes, we do, yes.
Central repository, and then there's somebody who goes back to all the people who help onboard your clients and say, why are they doing it? What are they looking for?
This is part of our DNA. We talk about it all the time. This is not just, you know, one-time event or periodic event. This is how we run our business.
How would you sum that up, that philosophy of bringing that data back?
I mean, the overall philosophy of our business is to provide amazing service. And how we define amazing service is significantly broader than what it implies. It would imply amazing services. When you contact us, we will deliver a really good service to you. But the way we define amazing service goes from internal culture, from reliability of our products, reliability of our network, plus, you know, how we serve customers ultimately through our customer service organization. And that customer lives, since the very beginning, we ingrained in our DNA that the customer lives inside of the company. And so that closeness to customer is extremely important to us. And it transpires in multiple ways, informal and informal ways. We have processes that are designed around that, but also in the DNA of the people that are here for a very long time, and they are so passionate about the customer experience that we we are absolutely not, you know, even allowing for that DNA to be altered with. And when you look at Nextiva reviews in the marketplace, you know, of course we have dissatisfied customers, but we take this stuff so seriously that we go out there and we rock it and we try to understand that. And, you know, we do anything in our power to save those customers, to make sure that we rectify those issues. Sometimes we can't. And we learn from those experiences. And that is part of our daily process. Every day I am receiving an email with the customers that have canceled, right?
To understand why they canceled.
And why they canceled, descriptions. And then, you know, out of that, new processes evolve. And so it is ingrained in the DNA and in a lot of the way how we live here. So it's very tough to describe it. Because it's both, right? Informal and formal. The formality, you need that formality because we would not be able to scale as a company at that level. But you need that informality as well because information has to be able to move freely around the organization without any hierarchy. And that's what we do.
And I thought it would be so much more expensive than it is. I thought it was much more of an enterprise price. Right now, $45 a month per person is what you guys are charging for the pro feature. And you have absolutely people who are single entrepreneurs still using your software.
Absolutely, we do. And we have companies that are super large that use our software.
I see that too. All right. For anyone who wants to go check it out, the website is nextiva.com. Tomas, thanks so much for doing this.
All right. Thank you for having me.
I'll close it out by thanking the two sponsors. First, if you need hosting for your website, go check out hostgator.com/Mixergy. And second, if you want to hire the best developers, check out toptal.com/Mixergy. Finally, when we talk about culture, I really highly recommend that you check out this one course that we did with an entrepreneur at Mixergy who talked about how he built culture in his company. You can see it at mixergy.com/Scott because his name is Scott. Scott Binns. Tomas, thanks.
Good luck with your marathon.
Oh, yeah. Five more to go this year. Bye.
Awesome. Thank you.
See you.